You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by the MLB.com Shop.
Welcome to MLB.com Extras, the American League West. I'm Richard Justice of MLB.com. We're going to discuss the American League West, a division that's been very active in this offseason, with the Mariners again moving up, with the Angels getting stronger, with the A's in a period of transition, and the Rangers checking their health, and the Astros making some moves. So it looks like a very competitive division. We'll talk to our five correspondents. Joined by my old friend, Alan Gonzalez. Alan, I read your story this week about the Angels now needing to acquire a young, controllable third baseman for 2016, and I almost started to cry. I thought, well, the Angels are in such a good shape that they're planning for 2016. And when you look at their roster, that's exactly the case, in that Jerry DePoto has done a phenomenal job lengthening his pitching staff. He has got a good bullpen. He's got a good lineup. I mean, do they have questions? But the Angels are a team that led the major leagues in victories last year, began this spring training in a very good place, don't they?
Yeah, they really do, Richard. And I think, first, thanks for reading also, by the way. They're in a situation where, look, Jerry DePoto is always thinking ahead, and he looks at every position in the sense of where are they going to be at in that position in a couple of years. He's always thinking about the next wave to come in, and I think it's part of a larger, more fascinating way of looking at baseball rosters. When you look at what the Angels and also to some extent what the Dodgers have done, these are two teams that won their respective divisions, spend a lot of money on their rosters, have a lot of high-profile players. But I think if you look at the moves that both teams have made this offseason, they're both kind of with an eye toward the future as well. And, you know, and I think the big question here, and I think it applies mostly to the Angels, can you have both? And what I mean by that is, can you make your roster more sustainable? Can you extend your contending window while also not hurting the immediate championship hopes of your team? And that's the goal of every major league club, Richard. It doesn't matter how much money they spend. They want to make themselves more sustainable, but also win now. And I was talking to Jerry DePoto at length about this last night, actually, about whether or not that's a delicate balance. And, you know, a prime example is trading Howie Kendrick for Andrew Heaney. That trade, no doubt, made them better long-term, because Howie Kendrick is a free agent at season's end. Andrew Heaney is a top pitching prospect, and he's going to be in the club control for 6 years. The question is, did it make them a little bit worse next year, because now all of a sudden you don't have Howie Kendrick in your lineup? And I think that's kind of the line that the Angels are kind of walking this year, and the Dodgers as well. And you look at these new front office groups, they're kind of trying to maximize the window a little bit, and if you look at the nature of baseball, Richard, and I feel like baseball more than any other sport, their postseason is probably more random than any other sport there is. And I think in baseball it makes a little bit less sense to kind of just go all in for 1 year. And I think what these front offices are realizing, or maybe not realizing, but what they're aiming for is giving themselves a 90-plus win team for multiple seasons so that they have several cracks at the playoffs. I just feel like, given the nature of baseball, I feel like sometimes it's a little foolhardy to just put all your chips on one season. The Angels are trying to make themselves more sustainable. They'd like to not part ways with their major league club to attain that third baseman. But if it's somebody that they really like, I wouldn't be surprised if they pull the trigger.
Yeah, you know, Alden, that's weird. I was thinking about it, that exact same thing. The Cardinals are wrestling with that right now. They can get Cole Hamels tomorrow, but it's going to cost them Stephen Piscotty, Marco Gonzalez, probably one other player. The Rangers have been very quiet, but they have all this minor league talent to trade. And I think, you know, when you develop kids, they become like your kids. You're invested in them.
Yeah.
And when do you know is the time to trade one of those guys to take a step forward? Jerry DePoto has done a fabulous job since he got there, because he walked into a situation where they were pitching poor. And, you know, and it's fair to point out Garrett Richards taking a huge step forward, Cam Bedrosian, Shoemaker. They've gotten some great guys that have grown
up. You need a little bit of luck sometimes, yeah.
Yeah. Hey, no, so second base, Howie Kendrick. Let me ask you first. What do they lose in Howie Kendrick? Because the Dodgers are looking at him as more than a second baseman. They think in the room, in the clubhouse, he and Jimmy Rollins will be impactful. You got to know Howie. What are the Dodgers getting?
Well, I don't think Howie's not really going to be the vocal leader. And, you know, I was at that Jimmy Rollins press conference yesterday and just listened to him talk. You could tell that Jimmy Rollins is the kind of guy that embraces that leadership role, commands the room, and really kind of commands respect, has a lot of confidence in himself. You could tell he's going to be a vocal leader. I don't think Howie's the vocal kind of guy, but Howie's about as disciplined a ball player as I've ever run into. You know, the great thing that Howie brings, the hallmark of Howie Kendrick, is his consistency. You know what you're going to get from him day in and day out. And I think that's characterized by his last five seasons. His last five seasons with the Angels has been as consistently dominant as there is for a second baseman. And maybe dominant is too big a word for that, but, you know, I think the big thing that the Angels are going to miss with Howie Kendrick is that he brings you offense that is very uncommon for that position, and there's no way that they're going to make up for that. There's not going to be one player that's going to get 600 plate appearances at second base that's going to replicate what Howie Kendrick brought offensively to second base. So they're hoping to do that by committee. They have they traded for Rutledge from the Rockies. They really like, who has played really well, you know, in the times when Troy Tulowitzki was hurt. They picked up Johnny Giovatella off waivers. They have Grant Green in house. They picked up Taylor Featherstone off the Rule 5 draft. These are not sexy names. They're going to try to do it by committee at second base. I think the one guy that they feel like maybe is going to really help their offense is Matt Joyce. They flipped Kevin Jepsen to the Rays for Matt Joyce, who's going to get the majority of the DH at-bats, and is probably going to play some left field to kind of get Josh Hamilton off his feet and make sure that he stays healthy. But, look, they don't feel like they're going to have one guy to replicate Howie's offense, but they do feel like they're going to have an offense as a whole that's going to be able to kind of produce like last year's offense, which is saying a lot because they led the majors in runs last year.
Alan, about Josh Hamilton, there were reports that maybe the Angels were willing to listen to offers on him. What do the Angels believe can be salvaged? What is Josh Hamilton going to be at age 33 going forward, in their opinion, do you think?
I think they have reasonable hope that if he stays healthy, he can produce. I don't think anybody in that organization could really could truly believe that he could be that MVP type guy that he was in Texas, even as late as that 2012 season, that last one where he had a bad second half. But they don't feel like they feel like maybe he's not going to be that same guy. But, you know, when you take a step back and look at 2014, he was really good for a couple of weeks, and I know it's only a couple of weeks, but then he had that thumb injury, and then he came back and he couldn't hit for power, and he said his thumb was fine. But, I mean, when you have a thumb injury as a power hitter, you're not going to hit for power as much. I mean, it's going to bother you. That was a major surgery that he had. He was still getting on base. He was still hitting pretty well. He would go on these little streaks. And then September was just a nightmare for Josh Hamilton. He could not get on the field. He was taking cortisone shots left and right. He had a shoulder injury. Then it merged into his obliques. And then he got into the playoffs with absolutely no feel for live pitching whatsoever. And when you get into that environment and you haven't seen any live pitching, you're going to struggle big time. I mean, you look at Josh Hamilton in that MVP season 2010. He rushed back at the end when he had that rib injury, and then he was brutal for that first series in that division series. He couldn't hit. And in the second round, he won the MVP when he finally got some timing under him. And I'm not trying to make excuses for the guy. It's clear that he's had a really bad run with the Angels, and he probably won't be the same guy anymore because it's hard to see him becoming that at age 33, like you pointed out. But I think at the very least, the Angels feel like if they could keep him on the field, then he could produce something. What that something is, I'm not sure, but they feel like he still has value because he still plays some pretty good defense. He still run a little bit, and he's still a threat in the batter's box from that left side. Now, how long is he going to be an Angel? When are they going to trade him? Are they going to trade him? Who knows? But I feel like at the very least, the Angels are going to let the 2015 season play out, Richard. Because, I mean, there truly is no market for Josh Hamilton right now. On top of the fact that he struggles so badly, he's got 3 years left, his most expensive years are coming up now. I mean, it's almost impossible to trade the guy.
Yeah, and, you know, we've spoken for 9 minutes about the Angels, and you know who we haven't mentioned? We haven't mentioned the best player on the planet Earth. Isn't that great?
That's a record, Richard, I think.
And he is the best player on planet Earth. So with Mike Trout in the middle of everything, the Angels are in a great spot. Let me one more question about the American League West. It looks to me, just from the outside looking in, like the Angels and Mariners have separated themselves pretty substantially from the pack. If you were doing an American League West power rankings, how would you line them up?
Oof, that's tough. I think you're definitely right. And who knows, right? Because we always say these things, and then fall on their heads when the season starts. But I really do think it's going to be Angels and Mariners. I feel like they've separated themselves. I think right now I'd put the Angels first just because they're coming off that 98-win team, and I think they're more complete with the bullpen, with the lineup, with the defense, with the rotation. But I think the Mariners are right behind them. The thing that may put the Mariners over the top eventually is that starting pitching, Richard. And I know Nelson Cruz was a nice addition to protect Robinson Cano in the middle of the lineup. They badly needed that. But when you're running out of rotation with Felix Hernandez and Iwakuma, Paxton, and Taijuan Walker, who may take some huge steps this year, that is really, really dangerous. Their bullpen was one of the best in baseball in the second half last year. But who knows, the bullpens, they fluctuate a lot. A lot of people were surprised that their bullpen was as dominant as it was. But that rotation is going to be really, really good. And that's going to be maybe their separator this year.
Alan Gonzalez covers the Angels for MLB.com. And I thank you for joining us, Alvin. We'll talk to you next week. I'm joined today by Vince Catronio, broadcaster for the A's, subbing for our good friend Jane Lee. Vince, I was in Billy Bean's hotel suite at the winter meetings. It looked like a war room. There were soda cans thrown all around, sandwich wrappers. It didn't look like David Forrest and Billy had been out of the room for about 3 days. The mad scientist got to work this offseason, didn't he?
Really did, and it's something that if you're an A's fan, you've lived through, but maybe not quite to the level that we saw in the short amount of time that Billy and the staff went through. When you had the kind of year, or at least their first 4 months, that the A's had last year, Richard, you know this. I mean, they were considered maybe the best team in baseball. A lot of people were punching their ticket to the ALCS against the Tigers, and it just didn't work out that way. And the last 2 months were frustrating. The team had 7 All-Stars on their team at one point, including Jeff Samardzija from the National League. And you look at this offseason, and a lot of those names are gone, and only Scott Kazmir and Sean Doolittle remain of that group of All-Stars. And it's just another. I don't want to say, because it's not right, it's not a rebuilding by Billy. You know this as well as I do. He's not into that. He doesn't want to be mediocre. I think he's retooling. He's trying to get some inventory and see where that next step is. One thing I think, if you're an A's fan, you know that Billy does have a next step in mind. I just don't think we've seen it yet.
Yeah, and when I look at the starting pitching, with Gray, Kazmir, Chavez, Pomerantz, with Griffin and Parker coming back, and then some of these kids he acquired, I think, in a landscape that is baseball now, if you got a competitive rotation, I think you're going to be a competitive team. Do you think adding to the inventory of starting pitching was a really important part of this whole deal?
It's always been in Oakland. It's a tremendous pitcher's park. It's one of the strengths of the franchise going back in 1968, and I do think while it's encouraging that both Jared Parker and A.J. Griffin are coming back this year, you don't know when, and you don't know what you're going to get. I mean, for Jared Parker, who the A's had acquired for Trevor Cahill a few years ago from the Diamondbacks, this is his second procedure, and the A's had acquired him just off of his first procedure. So what to expect as a starter from Parker, I think, is a great unknown. I mean, with A.J. Griffin, it's a little bit different, because he's not really the true power pitcher that Parker was before and was expected to be, at least in the mid-90s, where A.J., even when he was healthy, pitched at 90 miles an hour with impeccable control. So I don't think that issue with the surgery affects A.J. as much as it affects Jared Parker. So that said, Richard, I think getting the arms that they got, the guys from the Blue Jays, guys from the Padres, and the way they've kind of built up an inventory of guys. He may be giving Pomerantz a full-time chance, maybe giving Jesse Chavez a full-time chance this year. You can never have enough, and I mean, the A's have always done a very good job with their peripherals, of finding something in that particular player's MO that they like, that they think plugs into what they're trying to do, and collectively it makes the A's a better ball club.
So I think you and I agree that dust hasn't settled yet. But with a new DH, Butler, a new first baseman, Davis, a new shortstop, I guess, Marcus Semien, and a new third baseman, Brett Lowry, how competitive do you see the A's being right now in a division where the Angels and the Mariners are pretty darn good?
No, I agree, and I do think it is a little bit bigger challenge as it stands right now for the ball club than what it was in 2012, looking back at this point in 2012. Going into 2012, you just signed Cespedes, but you didn't know what you were going to get, and he was a force. You had acquired Josh Reddick from the Red Sox, and nobody saw 32 home runs coming, and that's what he provided that year. Then Donaldson finally got a chance to, you know, establish himself and kick in and settle in, and that really helped the ball club as well. So, I mean, they had, you know, when Brandon Moss, that they basically took off the scrap heap between Moss and Cespedes and Reddick in that 12 season, Richard, they hit over 70 home runs. And I don't see that right now unless Ike Davis has a resurgence, you know, unless you get Marcus Semien to the 12 to 15 range, maybe Billy Butler hits 15, which he doesn't do a whole lot of, and you get Reddick back and just more of a collection of those type of bats that can do that kind of damage. Because the A's, Richard, as you know, have been a get on base and not necessarily run, but get on base and hit it out of the ballpark. That's how they got to the playoffs the last 3 years, and I just don't see that element right now as consistently as it turned out in 12, 13, and 14.
Vince, as you look at the roster today, if Billy could fulfill a wish list, a reasonable wish list, would it be to get a corner outfielder, somebody to play left, or do you think he has something else in mind?
Well, I mean, I think going back for the last 2 years as the A's were going to the postseason, the thirst was always to try to find a shortstop.
Right.
And while they've got Marcus Semien plugged in there, Semien can play second, short, or third. And maybe if they could find a legitimate shortstop, they can move Semien to second base, and that would solidify two positions if that's the direction they're going in. But that player, Richard, really isn't out there right now. I mean, Ben Zobrist doesn't fit that mold. First of all, he's last year of a contract. The A's are not going to give up the inventory they just got for a one-year player. And, you know, they had the corner outfielder with Cespedes, and they traded him away for the number one pitcher in Lester. So that's always going to be a difficult path for the A's to find power. They've had to develop it or get it from Cuba like they did with Cespedes or trade for it, and that's been they're not going to get somebody to sign there. So I don't know how the A's put that together with that wish list, but for me, I still look at somebody up the middle, second or short, that's a bona fide. He's our guy at that position for the next 5 to 7 years.
You know, as I said, I was in Billy Beane's suite when they were, after they'd done a few of these deals. I forgot to mention that Bob Melvin, the manager, was in there too. And he seemed to be the one with the blank look on his face. Like, what the hell just happened?
But well, I guess he's been around it enough. And I mean, he knows how Billy operates, and you know, he got players, or the A's got players that people didn't really know a whole lot about, even in Bob Melvin's tenure. And through him and the coaching staff, and again, the way that they've, you know, put together the lineup with the different platoons and whatnot, they've gotten the most out of every inning, out of every out. I think if you're Bob Melvin, while you're seeing all stars leave and you're wondering who you're getting back, you have to trust the process that Billy is involved with in trying to put together a lineup that's going to be moving in an upward trend and not a lineup that's going to be stagnant. I mean, they finished 11 games back last year, Richard, and Billy felt like that team wasn't good enough 11 games back, what they had wasn't going to be good enough as it stood to compete this year. He had to find a way to change things, and right now he's attacking with young pitching and building that inventory. And again, with money to spend, there's $20 million that's sitting on the desk. If they can move, if they want to use that to move towards somebody and maybe still take some of this new inventory and acquire somebody else, it still has a chance to shape the roster before spring training or certainly before the season starts.
Yeah, and I think it's important to point out that Billy is A, brilliant, B, the most competitive person any of us has ever known, and C, he's pretty good at what he's done. He's doing this. He's done this before. So in a lot of ways, you just say, okay, I trust what the boss is doing. But it's certainly going to make life interesting. You know, I remember in 2012 when they got to spring training, they looked around and went, holy crap, we might have the best pitching staff in baseball here with these guys with the addition of the guys we acquired. So it's always fun around the A's. Billy makes it fun, and Bob is a great manager to put it all together. And I appreciate your time, Vince. I look forward to seeing you soon. And I'm joined by Greg Johns of MLB.com, who covers the Mariners. Greg, for a second straight year, your general manager, Jack Cerenjic, has had a phenomenal offseason. And just from the outside looking in, I know on paper it doesn't translate to the field, but it looks like he has gone out and done everything he hoped to do for a second straight offseason.
Yeah, definitely. Jack had a shorter wish list this offseason, which is nice. I mean, they came into the winter knowing pretty much exactly what they needed after winning 87 games and finishing one game shy of a wild card spot. They knew what they wanted. They needed to get the offense better. They needed a couple of quality bats, and they wanted to maintain their pitching. So, they went out and they got Nelson Cruz, obviously the linchpin. I mean, they had to have that big hitter in the middle of the lineup, the big right-hander, and they went out and got him, and that was big. And I think everything else kind of keys off that. But and trading for Seth Smith and Justin Reggiano to give him a right field tandem, it should be an upgrade there offensively, and that's big too. Lloyd McClendon, he's looking for quality veteran hitters, kind of to put in that lineup along with the young guys that he's got building up, and obviously Cano in the number three spot. So they've added a couple quality guys there, and then went out and solidified their rotation a little bit by trading for Jay Happ, and that was another piece they wanted. So yeah, some good moves for Jack, no question.
Yeah, and, Jay Happ's an interesting one. In a second, I've had scouts rave to me about Jay Happ, that he learned that it's not just pitching down in the strike zone now, and especially in the American League West, where that GM in Oakland gets guys, that gets hitters that have a downward swing plane, that he figured out you got to pitch up in the strike zone. I mean, he could end up being a huge addition. There was a time in Philadelphia where they said, okay, Cliff Lee or Jay Happ, we're not sure. It sounds silly now, but. You think about it. I mean, it could be a big addition. Let me ask you, though, as you look at it, looks like, just from the outside looking in again, it looks like the Angels and Mariners have separated themselves. Who do you think's better right now?
Well, I think you got to leave it to the Angels. I mean, they've got 98 wins last year, and then the core of that group back, and big payroll and all that. The Mariners, I don't think anybody's going to sit here and say they're the favorite, but I think they certainly put themselves into the conversation, and that's what you want as certainly as a Mariner fan and follower, to have them in that conversation. Too long of a stretch here where they haven't touched the playoffs, and they just got to get in that postseason and make some stuff happen. Lloyd McClendon said an interesting thing at the end of last year. He said we were built more for the postseason than the regular seasons. I just wish we could have got in and seen what we could have done, They really went out this offseason to make themselves a better regular season team so they could get to that postseason. He feels like they need to just score a little more to get that pitching, to get everything they should out of that pitching. But you got to get there to see that. I mean, who doesn't want to see Felix pitch in the postseason sometime? Yeah, I mean,
right.
He deserves it, and when that happens, it's going to be a pretty special moment.
Greg, as the Mariners go to spring training, is there an outstanding issue, and what will be decided in spring training? So much of the club looks settled.
Yeah, the big question, I guess, is shortstop. The big obvious question, anyway. The two young kids, Chris Taylor and Brad Miller, coming back, and they're going to let them fight it out. It's similar to last year. Brad Miller came into camp with Nick Franklin, and. Brad beat him out, had a great spring, and then actually struggled when they got into the season. So it always makes you wonder how much weight you can put on a spring. But they know a lot more. Lloyd McClendon's been with these guys a year now. He knows what Chris Taylor brought, good defensive shortstop that hit pretty well in his last 2 months in Seattle. And Brad, they really like the kid. They like his bat. He didn't hit well early, but second half had one of the better second halves for the club, and that kind of got lost a little bit because of his slow start. But he's a kid they like, and they're going to try to find a spot for him. So, it'll be interesting to see. That's the big one. Otherwise, they just need guys to really come out and be what they expect. They need Dustin Ackley to have a full season and not just the second half, a strong second half. They need Austin Jackson to be the player they know he is when they traded for him, and he didn't produce too well at the plate last year. After the brought in from Detroit, but he's a guy they're counting on to be that that linchpin at the top of the lineup. So, you know, those are the things. Logan Morrison, I guess, first base, that's probably a key. I mean, he looks pretty set there, but they need him to have a strong start. So, you know, Mike Zunino, a young kid, they need to step up offensively. You know, that they love him behind the plate, power. They just need him to be a little more consistent with the bat. So, you know, they got a lot of the pieces. They need everything to click right. And when that happens, you have a good club. And every club has questions, no doubt about it. And when you answer most of them positively, you have a great season.
Yeah, and Tylan Walker's a guy we've talked about for so long inside baseball, Pete, one of the most high prospects. And so now they're at the point where they're not going to tell him when he's ready. He's going to tell them he's going to come in and compete, and there's no pressure. I mean, he's not one of the five, you know, as of today. So where does Tylan Walker fit in as just a guy that they're going to allow to compete and find out where he is in his career?
Sure. It's interesting. They're taking a much different approach. I think Lloyd McClendon learned a little bit last year when Lloyd got the job in Seattle. One of the first things he said is, I will be disappointed if Tylan Walker isn't in the rotation. And I think that put a little extra pressure on a kid who just was 21 years old and had only had a cup of coffee in the big leagues. And Walker went out and he worked so hard in the offseason, he came in with a sore arm. He got into camp with a sore arm. His shoulder was, you know, so they kind of backed off on that a little this year. He's a kid with tremendous upside. Everybody that's seen him knows this is the kid that with all the talent, all the athleticism, everything you'd want. But they want to see him do it this year, and they have a little better depth, a few more options going into camp certainly this year with the pitching they have. He's not a lock by any means to make the rotation, but you know, personally, I guess to echo what Lloyd said a year ago, I'd be surprised anyway if he's not in that rotation. I still think he's going to be one of the five coming out of camp, but that's going to be played out down in the fields of Arizona when we get down there.
So it's a tremendous offseason for the Mariners, and I'm sure fans are tremendously excited. Thank you, Greg, for talking to us, and we'll talk to you next week. Thanks. Joined by my man, Brian McTaggart, who covers the Astros. Brian, you grew up in the Houston area, and you saw the first Astro get voted into the Hall of Fame. As a kid who grew up going to the Astrodome and seeing all those five and seven jerseys, Bagwell and Biggio, what did it mean to you when you saw this guy get the ultimate honor?
Yeah, it was definitely a great day, and just have Craig play for 20 years. I mean, the Astros have been around a little over 50 years, and he played for 20 of those. I mean, he's about Mr. Astro you can get. But I think there are a lot of Astros fans, a lot of people like me who grew up in Houston and followed the Astros their whole lives, who felt that they were getting inducted with him. I mean, I think he's taken a little bit of every fan and every Houstonian who's followed the team with him to Cooperstown, and it was just really a cool thing to see. I mean, we've had some great players come through Houston that we've all been able to enjoy. You know, Randy Johnson got in, but he was only here a brief time. Nolan Ryan, I remember going to the Astrodome in 1990, and you looked to see in the paper if Ryan or Mike Scott was pitching. You're like, well, we need to go. And Ryan, you know, went in as a Ranger, which stung a lot of Houston fans. But to finally have a guy that is going in, no one can take it away from him. He was an Astro for life. Is just really a cool feeling for a lot of people.
Yeah, and for people, you know, this is inside politics a little bit, but I mean, he tried to do everything right. He understood he was a role model, and he understood that it was his responsibility, I guess you would be the one word, to give back to the community in terms of the Sunshine Kids. He was mentored by Buddy Bell and Nolan Ryan and some tough guys like that. And, like, I remember a game in Milwaukee one time. He's about to go to the shower, and he says, hey, you need me? Because if you need me, I'm headed to the shower, and I won't be back for a while. I mean, the sense of responsibility that it was your sense to be part of the community, to be part of the franchise, to win, to have responsibilities to the media. And as you know, some of those guys were very strict, you know, tough about it. I mean, that was part of what you did as a ball player. And Craig tried to do everything right. And it's a pretty cool thing to see that, you know, because like you said, he represents all of us. He said late in his career, you know, he only allowed himself to look up in the stands and see those Bagwell and Biggio jerseys. Anyway, that being said, now Craig works for the Astros. And would you give Jeff Luhnow now has added two relievers, Gregerson and Neshek. He's added a shortstop, Lowry. And what do you think is next on his shopping list?
Well, they still need to sort out their catching situation a little bit. They have too many catchers. They brought in Hank Conger in November or October, right after the season ended. They brought in Hank Conger, and of course Carlos Corporan is back too. And they offered him a contract, so he's under contract for this year. So they're going to have to sort out that situation. One of those guys figures not to be here. It's probably going to be Corporan, I think, will be the odd man out. But I still think they're in the market for a starting pitcher. You know, they're not going to be going after Scherzer or any of those guys. But, you know, I think a middle of the road, maybe a fourth, fifth starter, just another veteran to plug in that lineup to where if one of the young guys struggles, you can put a guy in there. He's going to go out and give you six, seven innings in battle. I think they would still look for a corner infielder, someone who can play first and third. Again, another veteran that when Jonathan Singleton is really struggling, and you know, hopefully for the Astros' sake, that doesn't happen. But if he is, that you can put him over there for a week, a veteran player to play there, and you can give Dominguez a spell as well. So, you know, they have a little bit of money left to spend, not a lot. A couple of more things they would like to do. You know, I don't think they're in any hurry. They still have a month before spring training, but the big pieces, you know, have been acquired. The bullpen, I think, is going to be one of the best in the division, which I think is going to pay huge dividends for them as they go forward.
Before, you know, we made a lot about Springer and Singleton getting called up, and Springer, before he got hurt, fulfilled every bit of promise and then some. But Singleton played 95 games, and he really, really struggled, hit 168, had this weird reverse split where he was fairly productive against left-handed pitching. What do you think the Astros now, what do they think of Jonathan Singleton at this point, and what are their expectations for him in spring training and beyond?
Yeah, he's kind of a puzzling guy. I mean, let's remember, they give him a $10 million contract, so they expect him to be their first baseman for a long time, and I think he's going to come to spring camp, and he's going to have every opportunity to prove that he's that guy, and I think he's going to have every opportunity during the season to prove he's that guy. But you can't go out there and strike out in a third of your plate appearances and just towards the end just even struggle to get the bat on the ball. I mean, it was really difficult to watch the last couple of weeks when he was in the lineup, and then he ended up not being in the lineup at the end of the season. So, you know, there's a new hitting coach on board now. You know, I think John Mayle did a great job with a lot of guys. Obviously, Altuve credited him over and over, and I think he did great work with J.D. Martinez before he landed in Detroit. But, you know, sometimes a different set of eyes helps guys a little bit, so there'll be a different hitting coach to work with Singleton. Maybe Hudgens can figure something out, a different manager. He's got a little bit of experience now, 95 games under his belt, and knows a little bit about what it takes to be a big leaguer. But more than anything, I just think he needs to relax. I think he's over swinging, trying to hit a home run every time, and he's big and strong enough and got enough power that, you know, if he shortens his stroke a little bit and just tries to drive the ball, he's going to hit his fair of balls out of the ballpark.
You know, and another guy that they had high hopes for, and I guess I should say have high hopes for, he's 22 years old, Domingo Santana, passes the eyeball test, 6'5", and in his last 3 years at Triple A, Double A, and A ball, His OPS was 858, 842, and 921. So this guy has nothing else to prove in the minor leagues. But when he got a chance last year, 0-17 with 14 strikeouts in the big league, then mercifully they sent him back down. Where does Domingo Santana fit into the larger scope of things? I mean, do you know what program they had him on, or what do they hope to see out of him in spring training?
Yeah, well, he came up and was completely overmatched with Strange because, like you said, he had nothing else to prove in AAA. He dominated in AAA, came to the majors, got dominated up here by pitching. I really pull for this guy. I mean, this is a kid I think who wants it. He's very low key, a well mannered guy. His mother lives in New York. He spent some time in New York. I think he spent some time in Canada as well. So he's kind of a well-rounded kid. Only 22, has all the physical tools. And I think he's going to start the year at AAA. And even though he has nothing left to prove, I think he's going to have to wait for an opportunity up here. And when he comes up, he's going to have to learn to put the bat on the ball. And he did only have 17 at-bats. You know, maybe it was a case of just pushing too hard or trying too hard. And I think everyone agrees he was doing that. So too much physical talent, too young, I think, to give up on him on this early. And I think we're going to get a big taste of Domingo Santana in the spring, and we're going to see him in Houston at some point this year. And, you know, just like Mr. Singleton at first base, I think he's going to have every chance to prove he's a major league player.
You know, and A.J. Hinch is a big guy in this, the new manager, in that I thought you'd think of this when the Cubs hired Joe Maddon. He was great at putting young players in position to succeed. And I guess with guys like Singleton and Santana and it's Appel and Correa and those guys come through the system, it's making them feel comfortable as you can feel. Ultimately, he has to go out there and hit. What have you learned about A.J. Hinch? Have you spoken to him in a couple of months since he's been hired?
Well, you know, he's very impressive guy. I mean, he's very I think he's going to be a very even keeled manager. I think he's very teamwork oriented. I mean, I think he's hired a coaching staff. He's going to let them do their job. He trusts all of these guys completely. I know Brett Strom he didn't hire. That's a Jeff Luhnow guy, but you know, AJ's not a pitcher, so and Stromy does great work anyway, so I think you feel good about that. And he hired a great bench coach in Trey Hillman, who has managing experience, done a little bit of everything, and a guy that doesn't want to manage anymore. He's very content being a bench coach. So just a very smart guy, very conscientious. I'm really looking forward to when the season starts watching him manage the game. I mean, I really didn't pay attention to him when he was managing earlier in his career a few years ago in Arizona, so I don't know much about his in-game strategy and things like that, but now with the analytics, I think he's completely on board with that and all the stuff that goes into it. We'll see. It's kind of an open book at this point. But I certainly would be surprised if he fails at this job. I mean, I think he's kind of set up to succeed, not only with the staff that he's hired, but with the young team and the prospects coming up. I think he's got a chance to lead this team to the playoffs in a few years.
Well, okay, we got the final countdown. It's a tough American League West. The Astros expect to take another step forward, at least from a competitive standpoint on the field. And we'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks there, Brian. And I'm joined by my old friend, T.R. Sullivan, who covers the Rangers for MLB.com. Been a little bit of a quiet winter for the Rangers. T.R., John Daniels told me, look, we have prospects. You know, I could have made deals. I made proposals, including prospects. But I just wonder if there's a reluctance to trade some of these best kids for our veteran at a time when you really don't know what you're going to get out of Prince Field, or maybe you don't know what you're going to get out of Q. What do you think John's attitude has been in terms of shaping the club for 2015?
Well, Rich, I think you hit it right on the head. You know, I just throw out David Price. If you've traded two or three prospects for a guy like David Price, you end up getting a great starting pitcher, but if Prince Fielder and Chu and Darvish and some of the other guys aren't ready to go in spring training, then you've wasted three prospects for a guy who will be a free agent after this season. And I think that's the Rangers' philosophy right now, is they can't afford to give away prospects with a team that has so many question marks. Now, they're getting, you know, good reports in the winter on some of these guys in their rehab work, but I think you always get that in the winter. I think, you know, spring training is a more definitive barometer of where everybody stands. So I think that's why the Rangers are reluctant to make those big deals that, you know, you and John Daniels were talking about the other day. It's because you just don't know how much that will help your team if some of the other guys aren't back.
You know, maybe I oversell prospects. I'm sure a lot of people do. And last season exposed that there were some weaknesses at the top of the farm system, but they rushed kids through. And out of that emerge Ador, Gallo, Alfaro, Jackson, Alex Gonzalez. Do you think that John is extremely excited about the talent that he has now that has been revealed in his system? Or how do you think he feels about it, and how do you feel about it?
Well, I know everybody feels really good about it, and I think it's the farm system is really getting loaded again. I mean, it's been a 2 or 3 year process while some of these young kids have had to climb through the system. I think when you got one of the top power hitters in the minor leagues and Joey Gallo, one of the top catching prospects, and George Alfaro, about 6 or 7 pitchers who could be pitching in the big leagues within the next year or so, and you know some of the other hitters that they have. I mean, this team has a lot of talent coming up through the system, and it's probably higher in the system than it has been in a while. So I think they definitely have reason to be excited about what's going on down there.
If John were to make a trade now, would it be for a backup catcher? Do you think he's still in the market for a bona fide number one? You wrote this week that Shields is not on the radar, even though the Rangers met with him. What do you think is John's reasonable shopping list right now?
Well, I think, if you look at some of the starting pitchers available on the free agent market, and I'm not talking about anybody in specific, but if you look at guys like Ryan Vogelsong and Chris Young and kind of that level of talent. I think, you know, they could be interested in one of those guys. I think they definitely have to get a catcher. Robinson Chirinos certainly could be their number one catcher, but they got to have a veteran to help him out. So I think those are their two biggest priorities. You know, they wouldn't mind a left-handed reliever if they could get one. And, you know, they may add another bat, a right-handed bat before it's all done. But I think right now the biggest thing is I think they really need to find that catcher.
TR, it looks like the Angels and Mariners, you can argue with me here, they've separated themselves from the other three teams in the division. Do you think if Fielder's healthy, if Chu's healthy, if Darvish and Holland are healthy, the Rangers are capable of jumping in there and competing for a division championship, or is this just too much of a transition right now?
You got to remember, Prince Fielder's healthy, and at the top of his game, this is a guy who hit 45 home runs and driving 115 runs. Chu's a guy who can score 100 runs and, you know, get on base 40% of the time. We all know what Darvish can do and Holland can do. I mean, if those guys have big years, I mean, this team is definitely a contender. I mean, at the top of their game, I know Robinson Cano is a great player. I know Nelson Cruz is a great player. But at the top of the game, Prince Fielder takes a backseat to nobody as far as an offensive power hitter. You know, is he ever going to be the guy he was in Milwaukee? You know, that may be a long shot, sure. But, you know, the Angels probably said the same thing about Albert Pujols and Josh Hamilton if they're at the top of their game, too.
Yeah, it's going to be a fascinating spring training, not just to see how this group comes together, but the group that's after this group comes together, because it looks like a bright future for the Rangers. Anyway, TR, Happy New Year. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you again. Thanks for listening to MLB.com Extras, the American League West.